Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Pedri, el solito. El balón para Gavi, está parado en Dembélé. Gol. ¡Gol!
¡Qué jugada!
Pedri, Gavi, Dembélé, gol. ¡Gol! 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 Usman Dembélé, Ale Dembélé, cruzó con la derecha.
Welcome to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Ruri Barlow. I am joined by the colchonero that is Sam Leveridge. We're just off the back of Atleti against Barcelona, which is, of course, the headline. We'll come into various other ties. It was a fascinating week of La Liga and a fascinating sort of setup that we have now in La Liga. But this was, of course, the Sunday night partidazo. It was a partidazo, perhaps not quite in the conventional way. There was a lot of suffering, as tends to be the case at the Civitas Metropolitano, as it's now known. Sam, how are your emotions? You've literally just come off the metro from the Metropolitano. There was that last-minute chance for Antoine Griezmann, cleared off the line, agonising.
Yeah, I mean, I was out of my seat for that one. I was convinced it was going in, and then Ronald Araujo was just there, as he seemed to be so often for Barcelona in that game. He was a real rock in defence, and yeah, it was a strange one because Atletico defensively were pretty bad, and you can't claim they deserve to win, but at the same time, Barcelona didn't really threaten all that much after the goal, at least. They had a couple of early chances, but after that goal, on what, 25 minutes in, and then they kind of sat back and just defended the lead. And I think it said a lot. I mean, we look at La Liga this season, and we're so used to seeing like an imperious Real Madrid or an unbeatable Barcelona, but this year it's not like that at all. I think that's what we saw with this game in particular. I think we saw a Barcelona team that are grinding out results to pick up the points, but they're not looking great. I mean, this is far from a strong Atletico team, and Barcelona are quite happy to do the ridiculous time-wasting tricks and the kind of thing that so many Barca fans are so against, but they were happy to do that to try and grind out the result. And maybe that's more what Barcelona are under Xavi, a bit more pragmatic, but it's working for them.
Yeah, it's a long, long, long way from what Barcelona fans kind of expected when Xavi came in, which was going to be at least not the same, but something similar to what Pep Guardiola had in sort of total domination of the ball. But I mean, there's two ways of looking at this for me. So Barcelona obviously got the win. That was the sort of primary objective for them, and massively important. It gives them a 3-point lead at the top of the table. You look at these last two games, you look at Osasuna away, where they're a man down for most of the game. They come away with a 2-1 win. That was a massive result just before the break. And then they failed to beat Espanyol in the Mateo de Hoz derby, as it will now be known. But yeah, this is another massive win where they weren't particularly good, but they did manage to grind out the result. And I thought they defended, I don't know if I would call it well, but they did manage to hang on to their lead. And then there's the other sort of side of this where you look at it and you say, well, they're not playing too well. Without Robert Lewandowski, what do they really have? I mean, you mentioned that kind of first half hour. I thought that they were excellent for 30 minutes and sort of did everything you wanted them to. It was like Atleti almost worked out that they were sort of didn't have any width, didn't have anyone sort of going that wide apart from Dembélé from time to time. And so you just kind of collapsed on that kind of central area, and then that was them. I don't know what you thought of the game itself and how it went.
Yeah, well, I think the big strength that Barca have this season is that they're very strong defensively. I think I saw the stat on the way back that this was their 12th clean sheet of 16 games, is it? And that was more than they had 11 from 35 for Ter Stegen last season. So, I mean, when you have that strong foundation, I mean, that gives you the ability to not be so good in their other areas. And I think that's very much what Barca were doing. I think Atleti started a little bit off the pace, but that's been the same in almost every game that they've played this season. They're not a team that start brightly, and I think Barca looked to kind of capitalise on that. And then, yeah, I mean, I think Atleti were missing kind of that reference point in attack. When Alvaro Morata came in, he gave them a bit more of a target man to aim at to kind of get out from that press from Barcelona. And as you say, kind of focusing down those wide areas, I think Yannick Carrasco and Marcos Llorente really kind of had the chance to get at Jules Koundé and Alejandro Valde, and they did cause problems. But I think with Atleti, there was just a lack of quality of cutting edge in that final third to create something. I think Antoine Griezmann, perhaps this sounds a little bit more harsh than I mean it, but he looked a little bit like he'd forgotten how to play as a striker. I mean, he kept dropping very deep, almost back into that midfield role that we've seen him play a few times. But the issue was that he was dropping very deep and João Felix was dropping very deep and very wide, and there was nobody in that kind of position with the central defenders, and that meant that Araujo, Christensen could kind of play it out with time, and when Morata came in, that changed a bit. So I think that was a brave decision from Diego Simeone to go with that selection. I could see why he did it. I thought that was possibly even the best team to pick. But with retrospect, you wonder if maybe if Morata had started, how would that have changed that battle in that first half an hour or so?
Yeah, it was a weird game, I thought, especially from Barcelona's defence, because I think Jules Koundé was... I think they were all kind of fairly poor on the ball and playing out, and I think that's partly to do with the midfield too, but didn't really manage to get out of that Atleti press from that kind of 30-minute mark. And that's totally credit to Simeone, to Atleti, and it is... perhaps just frustrating match this one for Atleti, because it's maybe one of their better hours of the season against Barcelona here, but they still didn't get the result for it. Going forward, what are Atleti looking for? Because you've got the Copa del Rey and you've got obviously the Champions League, which is a must, it's a necessity. But yeah, what are you looking for from Atleti for the rest of the season? I know that's kind of a bit of a macro level to look at it from, but I mean, yeah, this is a damning defeat that leaves them well and truly out of the title race.
Yeah, well, I think there's the Copa del Rey, obviously, as you mentioned. I mean, the only silverware they're going to get anywhere near to is going to be the Copa del Rey, but I mean, Levante away is possibly, weirdly for Atleti, the worst possible draw for them in the Copa del Rey. So, I mean, that's going to be a big hurdle to overcome. No, but I think the main focus has to be top four. I mean, obviously, with this result on Sunday night, they're out of the top four going into the next match day round, and that's an issue for Atleti. I mean, having gone out in the group stages already a big enough problem this year, but to miss out on qualifying for it again, I mean, it feels like we're having this conversation almost every year now, but missing out on qualifying for the Champions League would have huge financial implications for Atleti that nobody really wants to consider, because this squad already needs enough of a rebuild, let alone trying to do it with much more limited finances. So I think that the top four is a must for Atleti, and they just have to focus on that. It's not going to be the most exciting ride for the fans or anything like that, but I think that probably even has to be the priority ahead of the Copa del Rey. But, I mean, you just need to find a way to score goals, and I think that's Atleti's issue. I mean, 20 shots against Barcelona, but I was looking at it, the XG per shot was 0.08, which I think Real Madrid's average XG per shot is something like 0.14 this season. So, I mean, it shows you the difference. I mean, plenty of shots from Atleti, but no real threat. And that's been the story all season long. And when you can't score goals, you're not going to win the Copa del Rey. You're not going to finish top four. So work for Diego Simeone to do.
Definitely. And I'm just going to run through a list of Atleti players. I want you to tell me whether they should be important factors in the Atleti team next season. Tommy Lamar.
I mean, I'm surprised he's still around now.
Alvaro Morata.
I like Morata. I'd say Morata, yes. I'll take Morata.
Antoine Griezmann, I think, is the most obvious one.
100%, yeah.
João Felix?
No. If we can find somebody to buy him, which is a big question, I'm not fussed if he leaves, but you have to find somebody to take him off your hands, and I'm not sure that anybody is desperate enough to do that. Maybe Chelsea.
Pablo Barrios, who started and was good.
Yes, he was good. I think the game kind of passed him by a little bit, but I don't think he looked out of place at all. So give him some more game time, because if you look comfortable against Barcelona, then let's see how you can get on.
Yannick Carrasco?
Yes, but if there was a big offer from the Premier League, I'm not sure I would say no.
And finally, this one, I don't expect him to leave at all, but would you be prioritising making him comfortable? Marcos Llorente?
Yes. Yeah, I think Marcos Llorente is one of those players that Atleti can build around. has not been at his best for a year or two, but I think we see flashes of it. And I think now, actually, I thought against Barcelona he was pretty good. Against Elche he was quite good as well. I think maybe we're seeing signs that he's getting back towards that point. He's also had a lot of injuries over the last year or two as well, which he never really had in his career before. So I feel like he's a player worth putting your faith in.
Fantastic. Interesting stuff, Sam. Well, finally, just a final note on this match. This was obviously a massive win for Barcelona emotionally. I mean, it puts them 3 points clear at the top of the table. It's a rare big game that Xavi seems to have won. I mean, he won El Clasico last season, but they do seem to come few and far between. What does this do for the title hopes, and what does it do for the title race? Or is just 3 points in a season where we'll see quite a lot of drop points?
I feel like both Barcelona and Real Madrid are going to drop a lot more points before the end of the season, but I do feel like mentally this weekend could have a big impact. I mean, going away to Villarreal, I mean, Real Madrid had drawn the last five times they've gone away to Villarreal, but that's the kind of point that you pick up that at the end of the season makes a difference. And to drop that point that they've picked up the last few seasons, and for Barca to go to Atleti, where I think they've only won one of their last five visits before Sunday, I mean, they were seeing these kind of all these tips and balances where you say, oh, it's only 1 point, it's only 3 points, but then at the end of the season that can really matter. So I think we're starting to see Barcelona grind out the results and Real Madrid struggle to do that. So if I had to pick a winner now, I'd say Barcelona have the edge, but it is a long season. I feel like Barcelona have that little bit more of volatility, that little bit of explosiveness, that it could all go very badly wrong in the space of 2 or 3 weeks and they throw it away. Whereas Real Madrid are that little bit more consistent, maybe, that you think you know what you're going to get. They might not be spectacular, they'll grind out some results, they'll let some results go. Whereas Barcelona could win five in a row or lose five in a row, who knows?
Yeah, it is interesting. Neither of these teams are particularly convincing at the moment, I must say. But we'll let Sam go, we'll let him get some sleep before the working week comes back around again. But thank you very much for your thoughts, Sam.
Thanks, Ryan.
And we'll be joined ever so shortly by Paco Polite.
Moreno, Thibaut Courtois bajo palos. Ahí está el belga, le dice Gerard Moreno, tíramela por allí, por la derecha. Gerard Moreno le mira, dice Soto Grado, atentos. Chuta Gerard Moreno, pues por allí te la tiro. Y gol, 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 gol. Y gol de Gerard Moreno.
That was, of course, Villarreal putting Real Madrid to the sword. I'm joined now by Paco Polite to discuss what was, for me, one of the best games of the season. Villarreal won 2-1 against Real Madrid. Gerard Moreno got a penalty. He also got an assist for Jeremy Pino. And a penalty from Karim Benzema also. So we've got Real Madrid back into it. But just how good were Villarreal here? I mean, Real Madrid, they had their chances. Vinicius had two good opportunities. But Villarreal dominated this game, didn't they, Paco?
Yes, they did. And I think that we have to give absolute credit to some of their players, I think. Both in the midfield and at the back, Villarreal bossed the game thanks to actually two veteran players like Dani Parejo on one hand and also Raul Albiol at the back. I think they were pretty proficient in almost everything that they performed throughout the game. Overall, the stats were in favor of Villarreal, not only the goals but also the chances, the shots on target, absolutely every single stat, leaving aside obviously ball possession, which was absolutely balanced. So yeah, I think we should talk about as a highlight the game that Dani Parejo played. Also, I spoke about Raul Albiol. Also in front, Gerard Moreno, regarding the goal that he scored, he did very, very well. Jeremy Pino was once again crucial after having missed or having dropped the ball in a few other games so far this season. I believe that Quique Setién has tried to recover him in some way, try to give him more confidence, and he definitely showed up to the game in a sense. And yeah, overall I think most of the players were in possibly their best level of the season. Even if we speak at of the keeper, for example, Pepe Reina played the game. Remember that Jero Rulli has left for Ajax, and that has been a big blow for Villarreal, even though they have been able to cash in for a hefty sum. But you know, veteran Pepe Reina with 40 years of age, and he was very confident under the sticks against Real Madrid. So overall, great news for Villarreal, and at the same time, you really cannot say that Real Madrid were, left the game unattended and that they didn't really bother about the game. I think Real Madrid went for it, but, you know, Villarreal were better overall in the game, both in stats and obviously in the final score.
And that was what Carlo Ancelotti said after the game. He said, well, your analysis is pretty simple. They played better than us, and it's very hard to win, even though Real Madrid do have a habit of it if you are outplayed. You mentioned sort of the individual players there. Gerard Moreno, I thought, was fantastic as well. Raul Albiol, Juan Foyt, I thought, pocketed Vinicius to a certain extent. If you look at the two chances that he created or that he had, they were moving into the middle away from Foyt, and you can see why Barcelona were kind of after him or certainly interested in him in the summer, because he's one of, defensively certainly, one of the best right backs in the world right now, in my view at least. But yeah, this was, I kind of wrote about Setien and what this kind of meant for him and how it's quite a milestone. When we came out of the Christmas, or went into the Christmas break, Setien's, the whole narrative around him was that this was not a man sort of in control. I think there was doubts about him, about whether Villarreal had got the right man. There was obviously the debate about whether he was going to get sacked. Late win against Valencia last weekend, which of course you, frustrating for yourself as well. Now this victory over Real Madrid, where not only did they beat Real Madrid, but they did it playing Setien's football. What does this mean for the Cantabrian going forward?
Well, I think that the task that has been performed during the World Cup break must have been very, very persuading for the players, because before the break, we had heard quite a few, you know, rumors here and there and reports coming from the heart of the locker room, talking about how the players on one hand didn't really gel and agree 100% with the play style that Quique Setién wanted to bring in. Remember that they had been, you know, grown used to the Unai Emery style of both playing and developing and relating to each other inside the locker room, and you know, it was quite a crash course on Quique Setiénism for the Villarreal players. But I think that they have been able to, you know, iron out all of the kinks in the last 2 months while the World Cup took place over in Qatar, and in the way they showed some of that improvement in some of their friendly games being played. But they did definitely against Valencia last week, and also I think that they showed against Real Madrid. You know, they were able to win the last game before the break, and later the following two, and finally, you know, Villarreal were mid-table side after struggling at the beginning of the season, quite a few draws here and there, and suddenly they become, you know, European contenders with only 3 games won in a row. So that, you know, speaks volumes about how it seems that things are finally clicking between Quique Setién and the players.
Yeah, as you mentioned, just a point off the Champions League places now, which kind of seemed unthinkable almost just a few weeks ago, but credit to Setién there. Moving on to Real Madrid, because of course this is now the third game in their last 5 that Real Madrid haven't won in La Liga. Since El Clasico, I think we've seen a drop-off. We've seen them struggle against what I think many people thought the problem with Real Madrid was against those kind of low blocks, against the likes of kind of Osasuna, who will hit you on the counter, Girona, who kind of sat deep but played a bit of football as well. But this was a Villarreal side that took over the midfield against them. How worried should Carlo Ancelotti be about this?
Well, I think that you could definitely see, for example, in the toe-to-toe or head-to-head between Parejo and Modric, which were, you know, paired in several moments of the game, you could see that Parejo seemed fresher overall than Luka Modric, possibly because of his involvement in the World Cup. And that, to an extent, was to be expected, you know. As in, for example, Benzema, who wasn't really on point with and on target with some of his finishes. Tchouaméni in the same way. He played also with France. Overall, I think that some of the Real Madrid squad, also Vinicius, I don't know, I think that they are coming off, you know, those weird holidays after the World Cup and getting back to shape. Also the holiday season, the Christmas. I don't know. I think that they were, some of them seemed a little rusty, and you could definitely see that against Villarreal. Most of Villarreal players were flying, you know, left and right, and even in the final minutes of the game when Real Madrid often squeezed, you know, 100% of the energy and of their endurance in order to level the games or even win the games, Villarreal were able to just sustain that level of performance, and that was crucial for them to win the game. So overall, I think that things will go back to normal for Real Madrid when they have a couple of good weeks with training in a regular way, you know, training, rest, nutrition, overall all of the ingredients that are needed in top level football. And unfortunately for them, that is going to be a bit tough because they have the upcoming Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia. They also have quite a few Copa del Rey games. If they are able to win them, overall the month awaits with, I believe it's 7 or 8 games overall, which is very, very demanding for any side, especially one as Real Madrid with so many international players who were absent during the World Cup break.
Hay mucha liga is one thing that is certain, the 3 points separating them now. We have delved deep into the title race, so we're going to move on. We're going to take a quick break now. We're going to move into the second half of the show and speak about Paco's Valencia, who, of course, are Real Madrid's next opponents in the Spanish Super Cup. But don't go anywhere. We'll be back shortly after this brief pause.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to part two of the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It's Ruri Barlow joined by Paco Pollitt, and we've sort of gone through the title race there. I mean, two big performances from Villarreal and Barcelona. Well, performance is one word for it. Survival is another. We're moving on to Valencia, who did not survive against Cadiz somehow. I mean, I think this is one of the games that you look at as a fan. They were beaten 1-0 by sort of an early goal from Ruben Alcaraz. This is one of the games that you look at as a fan, and certainly probably an analyst too, is 3 points for Valencia. This is kind of a must win, but Gennaro Gattuso's men could not break down the Cadiz defence. Paco, what happened?
Well, Cadiz happened on one half. On one hand, I believe that they definitely deserve the win. You know, through and through from the beginning of the game, they had their game plan very, very clear. They were able to score very early in the game. I think I shouldn't be too harsh on the way Valencia defended on that goal, the way Sobrino was able to run freely on the wing and make the cross for Ruben Alcaraz to finishing from the from the border of the box. But you know, some players, he likes Moriba, especially Diakabi, Guillamon. Valencia are suffering the absence, especially in the midfield, and I think that that is the weakest point nowadays. And Valencia are just falling to bits in that position in the pitch. And if you add that Castillejo left the game with an injury in his wrist, and he's going to be out for possibly a couple of months, and also Nico Gonzalez's injury last week, he's going to be out for at least 3 months. So Valencia has been losing both players and games in that position in the midfield, and that has been the top tier level of criticism coming Gattuso's way, because everyone realizes that Valencia really needs reinforcements over there, and the manager doesn't really have the power to demand that from the largest owner, shareholder, which is Peter Lim. So that regarding Valencia, the streak is awful. I think it's only one win out of the last 7 games. Valencia are actually 4 points away from relegation zone, which is awful. And obviously the fight for Europe is nowadays just a chimeric thought, because you really can't speak publicly about that when you are most of the time more worried about looking down rather than looking up. Whereas for Cadiz, I think that the win was definitely deserved, and they were able to squeeze out at least for a few hours out of the relegation spots. I think that they did well. I think Fali did a massive game at the back. Unfortunately, Jose Mari suffered an injury, which is going to be very tough for him. I think between 4 and 5 months with a knee problem. And obviously, we have to speak about the drama surrounding the beginning of the game, the kickoff, with that 53-year-old Valencia fan who passed away with a heart attack in the stands. Obviously, both sides, both Valencia and Cadiz, and all of the people covering the game, myself, La Liga Lowdown, everyone, we offer our condolences for his family and friends. So, yeah, overall, it wasn't the best night for Valencia. They have been grown to disappoint lately. And I have my interest picked about what we are going to see in the following weeks, especially in the Super Cup against Real Madrid in the semi-final. Also, the game against Sporting Gijón, I think it's a trap in Copa del Rey. It's going to be a very an easy night for Valencia players. And the following games aren't going to be easy. I think it's Almeria at home, and later we have quite a few away games.
Valladolid against Getafe, and then Real Madrid again.
Valladolid, Zorrilla, yeah, and also Girona in Montilivi. So overall, I think January is going to be tough for Valencia, and with that desperate need and thirst of winning, because again, 1 in 7 is just not good enough. Neither for Gattuso or for the club. 100%.
And so Gattuso had publicly said that he wants Nahidan Nandez, but they're still talking. Obviously, that Nico Gonzalez injury. I saw some saying that they were really missing Andre Almeida in the midfield, and that kind of first 60 minutes he eventually came on. But yeah, Gattuso, he's kind of based his game on playing nice, dominant passing football to a certain extent. But if you cannot win that midfield battle, it's a problem, obviously. Cadiz, as you say, absolutely 100% credit to them. I think they get roundly criticised, often dismissed and kind of looked down upon because they are playing perhaps less attractive football in many people's view. But like, this is a side that budget-wise and in terms of squad value is right at the bottom. And I think they're vastly overperforming their resources.
I think that we have to give credit especially to Sergio González, because as you said, the spending on his squad, the financial fair play for Cadiz is right there, bottom of the league. I think it's the lowest 2 or 3 sides. Cadiz is right there. So everyone knew that if Cadiz are able to remain in La Liga this season, it's going to be the same as pulling off an absolute miracle. But they are on the road to try to do exactly that. Sevilla won 2 their game, so in that sense, it was just happiness for 48 hours. But Cadiz have the chance. It's it's beginning to look like a rat race. At the bottom of the league, Espanyol suddenly being second to last. Obviously, Elche are the ones suffering the most, but you have over there Espanyol, Cádiz, Sevilla, Celta, Valladolid, Almería, Getafe, Girona, even Valencia with 19 points, only four away. So, you know, it's going to be both dramatic and interesting in the following.
It's certainly making for entertaining watching. Well, park that for just 2 seconds. I want to come on to the European race because that's also very tight. I mean, Real Sociedad got a 2-0 win over Almeria. They're absolutely flying. Rayo, unstoppable in Paco's words. And Betis beat Rayo 2-1 away from home, which is a tricky game to win at Vallecas away from home. So that leaves Real Sociedad on 32 points, just 6 behind Real Madrid, we should point out. They're 4 ahead of Real Betis, who are in 4th. And following that, Atleti 27, Villarreal 27, and Athletic Club 25, who play Osasuna on Monday night. And if they win, then they will move into the top 4. And as Matthew Clark, our good statistician, pointed out, the Basque Derby will be a top four affair if that all plays out. Any quick thoughts on the unstoppable Real Sociedad or Real Betis?
You know, it was quite an easy pick for our friends at BetUS the last Thursday when I said that, you know, Real Sociedad would win their game, definitely. Because at this point, I don't see another side in La Liga as thriving as them. They have recovered all of their injured players, at least most of them, because Umar Sadiq is still out for at least a couple of months. But Odraizabal is back. David Silva played very, very well on his birthday. And you know, he had a great performance overall. And, you know, their win against Almeria was just... nothing to really complain about that. You know, Almeria were just overrun from the first till the 90th minute. Nothing really to object in that sense. And both David Silva's and the Sorloth's goals were, you know, just impossible to overcome. Also pinpoint the performance and the role that Sorloth has been having lately in the squad. Remember that he came in like a last minute addition, late in the market. His tenure last year as a loanee hadn't really been that impressive, but this year without Sadiq as the big signing, without Oyarzabal as the, you know, the reference number 9 because he was out for an injury, he had to step up to the plate, and he has been doing it, especially in the last couple of months before the World Cup break and in the last couple of games. So overall, I think that they are the team most informed in La Liga right now, with possibly the manager who really knows their DNA the best, inside out, in my view, Imanol Alguacil. And that's why it would really be interesting to see a Basque derby with the two teams really sitting in the third and fourth place, because the atmosphere is going to be amazing regardless. But if you have that kind of, you know, table standings on the line and that kind of pride of being able to overtake the opposition or trying to get closer to the opposition or making wider the gap between Real Sociedad and Athletic Club, you know, it would be like the definite, the ultimate ingredient in order to spice up even further the
what
the
a tremendously fun La Liga we have this year, certainly at this point. Going to run through the rest of the games now. Espanyol, as you said, slipped into the relegation zone. 2-2 draw with Girona at home. Cesar Montes, who's their new centre-back signing, came on, but then swiftly conceded the equaliser as Yangel Herrera heading in the last minute. Mallorca, another last minute sort of winner here for them against Valladolid. I think it was possibly the most even game in the league this season. Both teams were almost inseparable for better or worse, but Abdon Prats with a headed goal right at the end from Mackenzie Lee set piece. Elche, as you say, they are the one side that are not competing with everyone else and not being on a level. And they suffered a 1-0 defeat to Celta Vigo. Iago Aspas with the goal, an important first win for Carlos Carvajal. And Sevilla, obviously, they got themselves out of the relegation zone with a 2-1 victory over Getafe. Rafa Mir with the winner.
Quick thoughts. Celta's, as you said, first win for Carvajal, which is definitely the, you know, the kind of support that he really needed in order to try to bring in his method after that you know, Chacho Coudet being dismissed and him being brought in before the World Cup break. Also, as you said, Mallorca winning in the last minute. Kangin Lee had a great game. Murici had a great game. You know, they are, we've been used to that already. Many Premier League games following Kangin Lee's footsteps, and plenty of rumors talking about that he could actually leave on this winter market if the right offer comes around. Let Joselu is calling for Espanyol. I think that he's on his way to become the Trofeo Zarra, as we say, that the top Spanish striker this season. He's on his way. I believe he's already 7 goals in, or 9 goals. I believe it's 9 goals. Massive season so far for Joselu, who has scored half of the goals that Espanyol have scored this year. So in that sense, he's just huge for Espanyol, even though they are sitting second to bottom in the standings. Joselu's individual performance this season shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, you really do have to feel for Joselu after going to Alaves, keeping them sort of in the division for a few years. Then he goes to Espanyol and they're already in the relegation zone, despite the fact that, as you say, he is Trofeo Zara, which is absolutely wild.
History repeats itself, definitely.
Yeah, and for that point, as I was saying, where were you, those teams that are after Murici, when Joselu was moving on a free? But that's for another day. Any final thoughts? Do you have a moment of the week? Do you have anything that you want to highlight from this La Liga weekend, Paco?
Possibly the goal scored by Luis Enrique for Betis was incredible. You know, the kind of dribble he performed in the midfield, and the power he showed in the run just straight into the box, and also the great finish crossing the ball. I think that was one of the best goals of the weekend. Also, we have to highlight obviously just the overall super high level seen in the Villarreal Real Madrid game, possibly game of the season. Maybe not if we see the number of goals scored, but you know, it were two top Champions League level sides duking it out, like going for it, and that kind of games are the ones that we definitely need more over here in La Liga, especially when you compare, you know, Premier League and other tournaments. In La Liga, we need more offense-oriented sides just going for it, paying the necessary attention to defending, but just trying to score as many goals as possible, and in that sense, I think that game was absolutely massive. And also, you know, as we already listened in the first half of the show, Barca just in survival mode. Even when the night isn't really the best for them, they are able to pull it off. They allowed just another goal, but they have allowed 7 goals only in 16 games. Which is, you know, ultimately the only way to win championships. You can score quite a lot, but if you are able to keep clean sheets regularly and are able to keep the number of goals allowed in a very low level, ultimately good things will come to you.
Particularly if you are missing Robert Lewandowski, as they will be
for the next
two games. But Ronald Araujo really highlighting his value. But we'll play it on that Luis Enrique goal, because as you said, it was fantastic. Graham Hunter has been a convert of his. He's been exercising his poetic license to talk about Luis Enrique, so we'll give him his props. But my thank you for joining us once again, Paco. That was fantastic to listen to you.
Obviously fantastic to speaking to you too. And remember that in the following days, upcoming... you know, it's a weird competition overall, but yeah, the Super Cup. Ultimately, it's the chance of winning an official title with only 2 games. So both Betis and Valencia especially should go for it. And Real Madrid and Barca, in both cases, I think they have much more to lose rather than to win. Because if you win the trophy, nobody's going really to care over there. But for example, if you have a final between those two sides and whoever loses... will suffer a big blow. But yeah, plenty of hope for both Betis and Valencia. Nothing really to lose, so they should definitely try to get their best players in top shape and go for it. And I think that we're going to have plenty of fun in the following days.
Ojo
Luis Enrique, que bien se marcha en el 1-2. Aguanta Luis Enrique, le pega. ¡Gol! Mira, ¡gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Gol!
¡Qué bien lo ha hecho!
¡Gol! ¡Del Betis! ¡Qué maniobra de Luis Enrique!
¿Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.